Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is the 13th of September, I guess. I have to start school today, so I shouldn't really be doing this.
You just said that now. You didn't tell me.
I know.
Now that we've started, you said you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me that
before?
It'll
be fine. Nobody's awake anyway, so it's fine. I'm sure we can just chat for a few minutes before the deluge. It's not really a deluge. It's totally different now. Starting school than it was a decade ago. That's not what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, I thought, earlier, acting like I'm going to bring it up.
Yay.
We're going to talk about, Bishop Shelby Spong died yesterday. He was 90 years old. He was a former bishop of Newark for the Episcopal Church. And he was a bishop for a long time in that diocese.
Like 1979 to 2000.
Yeah.
That's what.
I'm sure most people listening have heard of him, but not only did he, support things that, that later became the source of the turmoil in the Episcopal Church, like homosexual ordination and marriage. But I mean, that was the tip of the iceberg. He denied God being a person. And I guess he thought of him as I remember reading this. He thought of God as a energy force or
like Star Wars.
Yeah. Like Star Wars. He denied the resurrection, of course, and the atoning crucifixion. He denied basically everything that would be considered Christian. It's hard even to place him in a category for what exactly he believed, but he wasn't in any classical notion a Christian, but he was able to be the Bishop of Newark for like a long time.
And it's not like there are no Christians. It's not like there are not. Most of the world, in fact, is not Christian.
Right.
That's not unusual.
But not all the world is an Episcopal. It's a bishop.
In the I think that, I mean, Lewis died before Spong became bishop, but clearly Spong was in a sort of a divine sense, was the origin of the bishop on the bus from hell.
The Episcopal ghost.
To, in the Great Divorce.
Right, because it wasn't Spong that he had in mind, but it was a bishop like that. Bishops, I think it may have been Robinson, J.A.T. Robinson, but the idea was that the Episcopal bishop in hell, thinks he's lived a courageous life and
he's stunning and brave
right, and he's just followed his conscience, and so.
But he doesn't follow his conscience out of the church.
Right.
That's where you don't follow your conscience so that you don't have a pension anymore or a really comfortable house.
Or a lot of power.
Right.
So the Bishop Spong, when he decided that he no longer believed that Jesus was God's son, that would be a good time.
To leave the
to
church.
Say, okay, well, I can't with integrity say the creed. I can't with integrity say the word of the Lord after the Bible's read. So maybe I should, not maybe, I should then.
Maybe I should.
I should then take off this collar and resign my ordination and go do something else. Like be a computer specialist.
But there's nothing, learn to code. There's nothing that you can do that's so comfortable as church.
Right. No, like, it is very, right. Well, being called
without belief, like church with belief, I would say is super, super uncomfortable, but church without belief is really in the Anglican world, tea and sherry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really true.
We swam in those waters.
Love the sherry after church option.
your church literally had sherry after church,
yeah,
didn't it?
You were the one
you interned in. And I would say that the church where you interned during seminary was on the spectrum of the Spongish beliefs, but they weren't quite there. They believe that they actually, even though they were liberal, I think they did believe that Jesus was a person and he was maybe God's son and that maybe he rose from the dead. Do you think then?
I imagine that most people in the pews did believe in the resurrection. But
I mean, like the leaders.
The leaders, you see, now you're just getting into deep waters because it doesn't really matter what the personal convictions of the father are. If he does, if he says a good liturgy and he talks well, and then does it really matter? If, and honestly, if he's like a decent pastor, he visits people as they're dying and gives them soothing words of something or other, does it matter what he believes?
This is an interesting topic. I don't think that I don't know that a lot of our listeners grew up in the Episcopal Church. Or any of our one listener grew up. Well, if it's one of our mothers, and okay, then that person did grow up in there, knows what the Episcopal Church is like. But
our mother listener, that should be like a church title.
But I don't know that a lot of people who are now Anglican know just what it was like.
That's in the Episcopal Church. No, that is really true, because that's where you end up with things like, why can't we all get along?
Mm-hmm.
Ideas. You really, if you did not live and swim in the Episcopal Church in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, and I was born in the 70s, so probably mm-hmm. Definitely in the 70s when they were doing prayer book revisions,
mm-hmm.
You really don't have an emotional connection. You don't have empathy
right
for what it was really like, and so you think that you can play with
play at the boundaries.
Yeah, it's okay to ask, to live the question. You don't understand what live the question means, really. Right. And yeah, it's okay to play around with something for perhaps like Revoice.
Yeah,
which is why, like, I'm not excited about Revoice, because I actually was helped into the process by somebody who had to work for Bishop Spong and eventually became a bishop also. And you know, there's this kind of like, it's so funny and bad about Bishop Spong. Ha 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 ha. It's so terrible. None of us are like that. But it's okay, in some sense, to deny everything about the Christian faith and still get your money.
Yeah.
Your check at the end.
Right.
And as a young person, I did find that sort of grotesque and bewildering. I'm not going to lie.
But nobody raised their eye. I mean, except in the more conservative churches, nobody raised an eyebrow about that. It was
just something that you had to live with.
I remember in my home church growing up, I mean, I wasn't a Christian when I was growing up in the Episcopal Church. So, I remember that when I was younger, that what now is familiar to me, the gospel, I do think that was probably preached. I can't say I remember it, but I imagine it was probably preached there, because we had a good priest when I was younger. I'm talking like in my, before my teens, maybe in my early teens. We had good leadership in that in the church where I grew up in Corpus Christi, but you know, the rector who was a rector when I went off to college, things started to change dramatically. Like he built this chapel downstairs in the parish hall, in which along the walls there were pictures of the Buddha, symbols of Islam, pictures of Shiva, all the different images of the gods. And then in the center is this picture of Jesus with all the different symbols of the different gods around his head. Christus Pentacritus is the idea that he's it was just so blasphemous.
Better than all the gods.
He's just one among them. He's like, so that same rector built a labyrinth, which, you know, when your Episcopal church builds a labyrinth, you know, you're already gone, because the labyrinth is the ticket to mysticism of a sort that is usually paired with a universalism. So in our church, the labyrinth was paired with the beating of the Buddhist drums. So you would go, and there was a person in that church who had the Buddhist drum thing, and they beat the Buddhist drum, and you'd meditate. It didn't matter. It's almost, if you read Thomas Merton, you get this. Mysticism, at least in that form of it, your way in might be Christ, but then once you ascend to the mystic level, everything's the same on the top of the mountain. It all meets together. So it doesn't matter what name you use, what God you worship. It's just it's all the divine, and you're trying to tap into the divine. That was huge, and the church really adopted that. So anyway, I didn't believe the gospel. I wasn't a Christian, but I knew this was wrong. I said, this is, I had the sense that if a church is going to be a Christian church, it should be a Christian church. And so I remember listening.
I feel like that's really bigoted of you should be true.
This was in the 90s, but I remember listening to the same rector. He was a great actor. See, he could stand up and he would memorize his sermons, and he did it. He had this really deep voice, and it was very powerful to listen to him. And it didn't matter really what he said, because he said it so well. And I remember listening to him talk about gay marriage or gay relationships as this new thing that God is doing in the church. And I was outraged. I remember being very upset about this, even though I wasn't a Christian. I thought this is.
See, now that just shows that you're just bigoted, because if you're just against that.
Well, no,
I'm kidding.
I may be bigoted. It wasn't that I was against the gays. This is a Christian. Isn't this supposed to be a church? I felt really strongly that a Muslim should really believe the Quran, and that a Jew Christian should really believe Judaism. If you're going to be a Jew, be an Orthodox Jew. I think you're wrong, but at least don't sully it. Don't destroy it from within. Be an actual Jew.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about Judaism versus Christianity in a way that has integrity. But don't tell me you're a Jew if you're really a Reformed Jew who just likes to have all the festivals, but don't really believe anything. You're not a Jew. And we can't really have a conversation because there's nothing to nothing to talk about. So that's kind of the same feeling I had about this church. My old church is that it's no longer Christian. But that happened. The reason that happened is because the Episcopal Church decided not to discipline a bishop named Walter Ryder, who had ordained men into the priesthood who were actively homosexual. That decision opened the floodgates.
Everybody was upset with him, but nobody did anything.
Right.
Like, there was an outcry, a public outcry, right? But there was the institution itself did nothing.
He was put on trial.
That's right.
But they decided not to discipline him. And what does that say? That says, okay, well, now there's no, if you don't discipline one person, then you have no right to discipline another. And you were open the floodgates to, well, Bishop Spong. And that's what honestly, this is what we're afraid of with the ACNA, with the Revoice for One, and which adopts a secular view of the sexual self and just embraces it, right? As if this is really how we're supposed to understand ourselves, by looking within and finding our sexual identity and then mapping it onto the gender grid.
I love how you're always using mapping now.
That's my favorite word, because that's a wholesale adoption of a pagan way of looking at the self, a Gnostic way of looking at the self.
Okay, but there's also another layer we can map on here, and that's that
you're just mapping something on now.
Mapping
we're
things.
Just mapping.
And one of the worst sins in the Anglican world is there's two things, is a person who is badly brought up, who doesn't behave himself properly.
Yes.
That how you behave yourself is really more important than what you believe about the Trinity. That's one thing. And then the second thing is that anything in bad taste is also much, much worse than, say, not believing in the resurrection of the dead. So your behavior, how you comport yourself, and your aesthetic taste are the two most important things mm-hmm. in the Anglican world. And your doctrine needs to fit in around that.
This is why if you're strident in objection to...
I'm not saying that that's true. I'm saying that that's the way that the political situation and exactly theological right. thing is played out is because if you are a low-class, badly brought-up person who does not express yourself in the way that is deemed okay according to the spongs of the world... then you don't have, as they say, a seat at the table. So the inclusivity goes only so far.
This is why when someone does publicly object to someone like Spong or to someone like a writer, and does it without having the right creds, like if you're not a bishop, I mean the other bishops were able to say. In very polite ways, you know, Bishop Spong is way off base.
But they said it quietly and with good humor.
But if a seminarian were to say something against Bishop Spong, or in a seminary like BTS or a seminary like General, it's just uncouth, right? It doesn't matter whether the person's right or not. It matters that that's just how dare you? How dare you?
And the reason that I thought of that is because of the. Christian Dumais tweet
right
of the sneering at the person in the pickup truck with two flags flying behind.
You should link it
for the police or the, you know, it's the blue and black
so flag. One of her readers who read her book I guess videotaped herself coming up on the highway on a truck with, I guess it had a couch in the back of it and two massive American flags, one for the remembrance of police officers, the blue and black one, and or blue toned one, and the other one for the remembrance of firefighters, I think, and that has the red tone to it. And I guess was mocking the her reader was mocking it, mocking this guy.
Right.
Obviously he's
participating in American religion in an uncouth and unacceptable way.
Right.
And he is therefore beyond the pale. So it wouldn't matter what that person believed about the Trinity.
Right.
If that person really did believe that Jesus was the Son of God who died and rose again for his and whose blood covered his sins and had trusted in that person in God in Christ for salvation, that doesn't matter. That person is beyond the pale because right. his class right. and his aesthetic is outside the bounds of human society. And so you can, this is where you get the lovely idea that schism is worse than heresy.
Right, right, right. So
another layer in.
We'll go there yet, but Dumais retweeted that. And said perfection, like that was her title for this. Just adding to the contempt with which her reader poured on this poor guy. You know, he's driving his truck down the road.
The great thing though is that person doesn't care at all.
I'm sure.
I don't think he's probably poor. He would never read Jesus and John Wayne, but you know your tribe that way.
It doesn't matter what denomination, we're talking about Episcopalian, but it doesn't matter what denomination. Liberal theological liberalism is replete. I mean, I would say I'm almost defined by this attitude toward those of lower class or what they would call, or they wouldn't say it, but lower breeding, because it's primarily made up of people who are very upper crust, white, highly educated, politically liberal people. Who necessarily look down their noses at those who are of a different class, while at the same time patting themselves on the back for their sensitivity and love and kindness and goodness and all of the rest because of the views they hold.
And their, I mean, their theological fuzziness is like one of the markers of their goodness.
Right, right,
basically.
Right. I mean, it really is.
We're totally castigating a whole group of people here.
Well, I mean,
that's the great wonder of this.
I think that everybody who's been in the Episcopal Church knows what we're talking about. See, so not everyone, okay, not everyone is like that, but there is a type that we're describing that's accurate.
But that's the type that creates a certain amount of fear of being rejected. And then what you do, as they say, is you create space for actual heresy to come into the church. And you create a climate that sort of makes people who really do believe in the creeds and who do love the church and who do want to believe in Jesus for the salvation of their sins too embarrassed to talk about it.
Yeah,
it's not it's just not done. And getting up the guts to say, wait a minute, you can't do that, it's hard. Like, that's not in the water.
Right. Well, I remember, like, even like in the Diocese of Central New York, when we first started going to things like the what do they call them, the little clergy gatherings,
deanery
meetings. It was when there were six Episcopal priests, seven maybe, meeting these things, and I think the first time people looked at me like I was a monster was when I said that I didn't agree. What was going on? It was something about, it had to do with the gay thing. I can't remember what it was, but I remember saying something. I don't think I was impolite. I was just saying, this is what I believe. This is what I think about this. And the looks on people's faces was just like horrified for one, but also like, not just horrified at the theological position, but it was like I had just thrown, you know, poop into the pool or something. I was that kind of person, you know, and suddenly all of our relationships with those people changed immediately.
Yeah.
We really were looked upon as if we hadn't read a book before, yeah. As if we didn't have any theological education. They were shocked that we went to VTS and came out with that attitude.
Yeah, because the whole purpose of the going there was to have that drummed out.
Right.
Be saved from your bad ideas.
But so it was more than just a theological disagreement. There's also like, you are one of them. You're one of the lower.
You're low class.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not really bothered by, I guess I'm in the troublesome position of being in a denomination or a kind of church where the liturgy and the theology, I'm in it for the theology and the and the form, and not for the cred that I can get for being an Anglican. I'm always on the wrong side of everything anyway, but the nice thing is that on the other side, because this is true about Anglicans and people know it, other kinds of evangelicals have historically been really wary and anxious about being around an Anglican. So if you're with a bunch of Baptists and it turns out that they find out that you're an Anglican, they immediately suspect you because they're worried about John Shelby Spong, and that's good and right. Mm-hmm. And you have to sort of defend yourself or not if you don't want to. But there should be a way. I thought that the ACNA was going to be a way for people to be true believers in Anglicanism and distance themselves from the elitist Spongian progressivism that has plagued the church for 200 years or whatever.
And in some cases, I think some quarters, I think that's true. I think it's true about our diocese. I don't think it's true about the whole 18 as a whole, where you can still, you're still, people are still in more trouble for publicly calling out false teaching than they are for promoting the false teaching. That in some dioceses, that's the way it is.
It, I mean, it's and, okay to flirt with Revoice more than it's like...
To say it's to say that to, Revoice is heterodox publicly, is, and those who are involved in it are in public are in error, will get you a call from a bishop or from or reported to a bishop, and that's the road that Spong, that's the very same road that Spong went down. Not the same. I'm not saying the same in content, the theology, but the road is there's a line that needs to be drawn. We don't have the fortitude to draw it, so that then opens the way for other lines to be crossed, and we're on the way with the Revoice, with the influx of wokeness in the church. I mean, I think things are going on in some dioceses that we can't even talk about. It's not that they're a secret. It's just that it's too early to talk about them. But it's just it's unbelievable that the ACNA has come to the place that it is. And I'm hoping that either it reforms, or that there's, I don't know. I just hope it reforms.
Maybe there's a God.
Yeah, I mean, I believe there is, of course. I'm sure there is a God. But it's just, and I think the reason, I don't think the reason it's happening this way is because a lot of people who are in the ACNA now haven't been in the Episcopal Church and they just don't know where the road goes.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really good. I'm really glad that the ACNA is not just a lot of people who left the Episcopal Church. Like, right. That's a fantastic thing that it's managed to grow and become viable as an institution. And I don't like the word attract, but people who, you know, it's at the same time that a lot of corners of evangelicalism have sort of flamed out, like the Mark Driscoll flame out. And the sense of desolation about the word that's coming to me is fatuous, but I'm not sure that that's what, like, really shallow teaching. You know, I mean, I was really shocked that only 6% of evangelicals apparently believe in the Trinity. So there's a major crisis of belief and faith and doctrine in evangelicalism. Mm-hmm. And the ACNA kind of was born just as a lot of more solid denominations are just starting to succumb to the same kinds of problems. And right. So people are looking for places to go, and you think, oh, well, I love, that's a beautiful liturgy, and look how much scripture is being read, and the pastor preached about the Bible. But you have to look deeper. You have to do your research as you look for churches, to make sure that it's really does the pastor really believe in the resurrection of the dead? Do they think that gay marriage is like
bad but not terrible,
but not a heretical
right
thing? What is their doctrine?
What do they think about abortion,
and what is their attitude towards the lower classes of people? I would say that that's a big thing.
And not by that,
your uncouthness by joining a church that you think will make you.
By that, you don't mean that, because everybody's going to say, "Oh, we love the poor." I mean, we're not talking about like what their theological position is on poverty, because that's different. what we mean is, like, how do they actually treat people who are
do removed? You
so if someone walked into your church wearing a MAGA hat, how would your pastor respond?
Like, yeah,
would it be, I mean, you wouldn't want, either way, you wouldn't want, oh great, he's one of us because he's wearing a MAGA hat, nor would you want, oh my goodness,
he's one of those people. Like, could you preach the gospel to the people that you despise? And is there a culture of despising other people in the church? Because if that's there, like, you're allowed to despise other kinds of people, or you know, around COVID or something, then that's going to be the way that heresy comes into your church. You should not be sneering and dismissive of other kinds of people. I say that as somebody who, you know, if an Episcopalian walked into our church, I would want to tell them about Jesus and welcome them. But they wouldn't be allowed to come in and change the theological culture of our church because they were uncomfortable with the theology or something like that.
Right.
I just think that scorn, the only way for the ACNA to go, to be okay, is for the scorn to go out the door ultimately. But
scorn
for people in their political positions. Like, I think you should scorn heresy. I think you should be super scornful and angry about heresy.
But that's it.
Yeah. And then it should stop.
Yeah.
That's just my thought. Nobody's asking me. So, I'm sure we've said everything. I must say, I am not actually bored. I feel bored. Not really. Like, the news is so the same over the last year. You know, there used to be really fun, interesting things to talk about in the news. And somehow over the last year, it's just all the same every day.
Well, the mask mandate's pretty new. We've decided not to talk about
that. You mean the vaccine mandate?
Yeah, that's what it is. Which I think is an overreach, but...
Yeah, but it's the same, like, we've been talking about stuff like that for a year. And it's not... It's not even that shocking. It is shocking, but it's not that shocking. I'm struggling to feel excitement about news commentary. But I guess I'm down for the struggle. Struggle is a Christian word for failure. And I know this is short, but we have to start school today, so...
We should say that Bishop Spong led many, many people away from Jesus, and that it was, he did horrible things that led people into the darkness, that we do hope that he, before he died, confessed his sins and turned to Jesus, because even those horrible things that he did and said could be forgiven, because the Christ that he denied for most of his life did actually die on the cross.
Even for him.
And the blood is sufficient. Even that kind of, the depth of that false teaching and heresy. So hopefully we pray that he did repent and believe before he died.
Yeah. And anyone who repents and believes in the gospel can be saved, even if they are wearing the wrong kind of hat.
Right.
Well, so thank you so much for listening, and maybe we'll be back next week.